Hello everyone and welcome to this week's episode of Boat Briefing. My name is Stuart Campbell and here to help me navigate through all the news from the world of superyachting is Charlotte Hogarth-Jones.
Hi, how are you doing?
Good, very, very good.
I mean, we basically never see each other these days because you're in the air and I'm in the air and you've been to much more glamorous places than I have. I've been in Milan and you've been in Miami, right?
Miami. The only time we ever see each other is in a on a screen recording a podcast.
Yeah. It's true, it's true. But how was Miami? Are you recovered yet? Semi,
still. Miami was amazing. It's a first ever Grand Prix in Miami and the city put on quite the show. I mean, it's a buzzy, very cool city anyway. And despite the track, because it originally was envisioned as a city track, much like Monaco or various other places, but that didn't eventuate, sadly. So the track was built in the stadium of the Florida. What's the American football team down there?
Asking the wrong person there.
Really betraying my NFL knowledge. Anyway, so it was built in the basically in the car park. The track was built in the car park. It's an enormous sports stadium. And they actually did a really good job. So it's a bit of a trek outside Miami. It's kind of half an hour, 40 minutes in an Uber, but it was very, very cool.
And you didn't see our friend Bernard Van Orange there?
No, no.
Because he was involved with the F1 over there in the Netherlands.
I suspect we didn't have the access that he had.
Okay, yeah, okay. Better seats, I get it.
but we weren't at the track for the race, sadly. We did see the qualifying. We were there for qualifying, entertaining some people. And then on the preceding Thursday, on the 5th, we had an owner's club function on board a boat in South Beach, which is very, very cool.
What was the boat?
Constance, 60-meter Constance. So right. You kind of look at the numbers, you think, oh, God, it's going to be a great party. But then we had a great night, but the sun deck is so vast on that boat, it just swallows people. Mm. But it was a lovely evening, but Miami, my God, hot.
Yeah, hot. Really. And where were you staying?
We were staying in a hotel called The Good Time, which I think, at least I was told, rumoured to be owned by Pharrell Williams, who I even think I might have even, I think I saw him at an event.
Did you?
But I can't be sure.
It's a sore point for me, Pharrell Williams, because I've been due to interview him 3 times in my career and every time he's cancelled last minute. So now every time I even hear the name Pharrell Williams, I think, my God, there he is again, just walking around boats. If I was there, I would have tried to kind of grab him, but maybe that's why he keeps cancelling. He thinks I'm a bit nuts.
But the whole place, the whole city was awash with fancy people. Celebs, obviously, you saw them all wandering the track before and after the race. But yeah, very, very cool. It'll be back. I think they've signed a 10-year deal. So we'll hope to persist with this event and see it in Miami same time next year.
It's always great meeting these kind of different groups of owners from different demographics. It's always nice hearing about the kind of, I don't know, the local market over there and their take on things.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. There was a whole bunch of new people we had never met before who came along on Thursday. So that was a real thrill to meet them and hear their stories. But you've been hearing some stories of your own, haven't you? Not in Miami, but in Milan.
Yes, I had to get up at 3:30 in the morning, which might make you think I was doing long haul, but it wasn't. I was just going to Milan. But it was lovely, and it was for our upcoming Superyacht Design Festival, which I think we've mentioned a few times, coming up at the end of June from the 22nd to the 24th. So I went over there to meet Stefano Bueri's team. He's the architect. Apparently, he doesn't like the term archistar. We say starkitect. Italians say archistar. Apparently, he doesn't like being called either of those things. But he is basically a big deal architect. And if you've been in Milan, you can't fail to know about this kind of huge skyscraper he's designed with this vertical forest running up it. And now he's kind of replicating these vertical forests all over the world, in especially in Asia and places like that, as well as lots of other very cool cool design and architecture stuff.
Did you see the vertical?
You know what, I didn't. It was such a flying visit. I was in with his team for 4 hours or something, and then straight back to the airport, which is really annoying because I'd like to, and I definitely will when I'm there for Salone, as well as this other kind of exhibition he's got coming out.
It does look awesome, that.
And he's an interesting person to talk about design and yacht design right now, because his whole thing is kind of having a higher purpose. So his purpose is kind of more sustainable, more environment, you know, a bigger connection with the environment, a bigger awareness of the environment.
Even and 40 stories up.
Kind of. Even 40 stories up. And so his whole idea is that whatever project he does, whether it's a piece of furniture or a building or a clubhouse or a private apartment or whatever, he has this idea in mind, and he keeps kind of refining and honing this idea. But in particular at SDF, he's going to be showing lots of his work in relation to kind of marine environments. And it was incredible. They were kind of clicking through these examples of some of the things he's done. And, you know, even as a non-yacht designer, almost everything they showed me, I was like, oh, you could put that in a yacht, or that could be a yacht thing, or everything they did. Like, he's done this amazing, quite some time ago, beach club in Marseille, where wherever you are in the building, whether you're on the ground floor, whether you're going up the stairs, whether you're walking down, you're kind of surrounded by the sea. It's very difficult to explain without seeing the pictures, but he's done lots of that kind of thing, and also lots of interesting projects, which I also think are relevant to yacht design at the moment, where you're kind of completely invisible from the outside, but from the inside you have this incredible view and this incredible connection to nature, and this idea of kind of, yeah, sort of being not so obtrusive in the landscape, but from within really enjoying it and making the most of the fact you're out on the water. So he's a very brainy guy. He's a very interesting guy. He has a yacht himself, so he kind of knows what he's talking about when it comes to what might be possible. I'm really looking forward to hearing his thoughts.
It's amazing, isn't it, when you meet these guys. And on paper, they might not have any obvious connection to the water, but they always end up owning a yacht, don't they? And
yeah.
You always end up having a conversation about how they're inspired by the sea and the water and the open space and all that kind of stuff. It's almost universal.
Yeah, especially with these Italian designers. I mean, I think most of them spend their summers kind of nipping around in Bonetti's, and I think he has done something similar. I keep begging to get a picture of him on his boat. I think he's quite a kind of a serious man. He's not that keen to show us a picture of him in his trunks, but I'm doing my best to bring that to the good people of the Superyacht Design Festival, because I think it's always interesting to see what boats people have personally. And anyway, after that, I went to their offices, the kind of Stefano Boeri studio in the centre of Milan, which was very cool. It was like a kind of townhouse, you know, so you go up floor by floor, and it felt very much like a residential home. There's kind of big libraries everywhere and big piles of books and people sitting around, to the point where they said, you know, actually it feels a bit too much like home, and they all stay there kind of drinking in the evenings and working late. And there was a kind of vaguely sort of student-y cool vibe about it. And I was quite amused to see there was in Mr. Boeri's office, you know, the hub of all these incredible designs, there was just a quite dusty Technogym rowing machine covered in books. And I thought, okay, that's at least it's good to see some real life in amidst all these things.
That's the destiny, the inevitable destiny of most rowing machines, isn't it?
Exactly. To be fair, you know, lots of it did look very well used. It was just the bit where you'd actually do the rowing that looked dusty. But anyway, yeah, so it was great to meet them. And yeah, like I said, they've got a very cool project coming out if people are going to Salone di Mobile. I don't think I can say what it is. I'm not sure I'm allowed to kind of expose the secret before it's out. But I'll definitely check it out, and you should too. It's a very cool thing he's unveiling there, which is relevant if you're interested in water. Maybe I'm allowed to say that. And then also met with a few other people and kind of speaking to a few other people in the run-up to SDF. We mentioned before we're interviewing Giorgetto Giugiaro, this kind of huge car designer who's done everything from the VW Beetle to the Fiat Panda to the Maserati Spider to the Back to the Future car, you know, you name it, shapes of pasta, basketballs, Nikon cameras, everything. He's a big name. But I'm really pleased that his biographer and his kind of lifelong friend is going to be interviewing him on stage, which is great. And he mentioned to me, which I thought was quite interesting, and hopefully it will come out in the course of the discussion, that Giorgetto was one of the first guys to kind of start looking at Asia and Korea and the Middle East. He said, you know, back in the 60s, he was really keen on going out there, meeting clients out there, working with people out there, which, you know, when you hear about it now, you think, oh, cool. But actually, no one was doing that back then at all. You know, really no one. So he's a really interesting guy. And then I also had a rehearsal with one more, and it's not all Italians speaking, I should emphasize, but these are the three Italians I've been speaking to recently. We also have a cultural historian. He's a professor over in Philadelphia, this guy called Luca Cottini, who's a kind of an Italian cultural historian, and he's doing this big talk all about exactly what makes, you know, the sort of the DNA of Italian design, because Italian design, famous the world over, so many iconic things like Campari bottles or, you know, anything that you can think of, all these recognizable Alessi things, for example. What makes Italian design, including boat design, so distinctive, so special, you know, has this edge, or at least, you know, some would say it has this edge. What makes it like that? And he was talking to me, one of the things he said about superyachts, which I thought was so interesting, is, you know, if you look back at other things in Italian history, it's almost a bit like a theater, right? In the theater, you have the stage and you have the costumes and you have the music and you have the plot. And he was saying, you know, a superyacht is like that in a lot of ways. You have, you know, you have the stage, you have the setting, you have the objects within it, you have the balance between the different areas and the kind of tension between them. And I thought that was quite an interesting way of looking at things. You know, if you're an interior designer, it's not about putting objects into a space. It's about kind of playing into this wider scheme.
I'm looking forward to his talk, because that's closing the second day, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. That's kind of finishing off the, we thought, you know, 2 days talking about design in Italy, it would be a nice way to round things off talking about, you know, actually what makes, and actually what he was saying was, you know, the fact that Italian manufacturing hasn't always been the kind of foreleader, you know, the best in the world, has actually given them a bit of an advantage in that historically Italians have seen what other, you know, other countries have done in terms of big production boats or whatever, and then taken that idea and refined it and put their own spin on it and put their own kind of, you know, aesthetic twist on it, which means not only is it a functional object, it's also a beautiful one too. And he's got examples of that happening time and time again, of something becoming popular in culture, something being manufactured on a large scale, and then Italians kind of taking that, perfecting it, refining it to make it something really successful. And I think you see that with yachts a lot. You know, Italian boats are known as some of the most beautiful boats in the world, and they definitely have a knack of kind of creating a very identifiable look, a very strong brand, and then keeping that alive for years and years. You look at something like Riva or something, that's not lost its cool ever, seemingly, which is pretty incredible if you think of how many years they're, you know,
it lost its cool in the 70s and 80s.
Oh, really? Yeah. Okay, I was wrong. I wasn't really born then, because I'm so young, you see. So that's why that won't be apparent to me. So anyway, busy time, not just for people trying to reinvent Rivas, but for everyone, and here at Boat, which is why we were going to mention that we were recruiting at the moment.
Yeah, so we actually picked up a staff member via the podcast. We had someone join our sales team, Charlie. Listening to the podcast one day when we mentioned we were looking for someone for our sales team, and he's now on board. So with that success behind us, we've got 4 roles we're recruiting for at Boat International. We have openings for a digital writer, a sub-editor, an events manager, and an events assistant. So the events, we got so many events this year.
Yeah,
it's crazy. So we just need to upscale. We need more people, simple as that. Similarly, on the content side, the demands of the website, social media, and even print are burgeoning. So we need a digital writer and a sub-editor to help us work through all this content. So get in touch, podcast@boatinternationalmedia.com. If you fancy talking about one of those roles.
Yeah, if you join us as a sub-editor, you also have the pleasure of seeing the inner workings of Stuart Campbell's mind as he files something from aeroplane tarmac. So it's a fascinating job.
It's really the inner workings of, there's 3 or 4 cogs.
Yeah, and trying to understand my handwriting as well. It's a joyful task.
Yeah, so come join us. It's great. It's good fun. All right. So one thing, one story I spotted that I wanted to mention was the fact that, it's the top story on our website today, but I'm not sure it will be by the time the podcast comes out, but you can find it pretty easily. And we'll put a link in the description. David Bowie's former boat is for sale, listed by Fraser. The 39-meter Bonetti El Caran was commissioned by the Thin White Duke in 1974. She was first known as Deneb Star, and was designed inside and out by the yard, who actually did a really good job. She's a great looking boat. So she's very classic looking, with that, you know, the canoe stern of Bonetti's of old. She's had a series of refits, as you'd expect for a boat delivered in 1974. But there's still a sense of Bowie in the artwork on board. And she's asking 4.85 million euros with Fraser. Favorite Bowie track, Charlotte?
I would say for me, it's a toss up between Space Oddity, obviously, and I quite like Ashes to Ashes, you know, bit left field. But I love the look of this boat. I love looking at celebrities' boats anyway and seeing what they've gone for. But it's not what I would have expected from Bowie. It's a bit kind of left field, like, yeah, it's kind of cool, but slightly more kind of understated than I would have expected. It's not a big look at me, you know, bang. It's, but it is cool. I like it.
For 1974, that would have been a big, big boat. And there, in terms of, I think Bannonberg wasn't quite in his stride then, or maybe he was just starting. Well, no, I think he was actually, but there weren't many of his boats on the water at that point. The slightly more classic styling was predominant. So I think, and 39 meter boat in 1974, that was a big, big boat.
Yeah, it was a big deal.
Let's face it. Mm. I'm a big fan of Young Americans.
Are you going to sing a bit?
If you've ever heard me sing, you would never ask me that question.
Okay, disappointing. Never mind.
In other news, I wanted to mention that the June issue of the magazine is out now. And one of the features particularly I want to talk about, because it's all about the booming superyacht market. So we asked the very sensible question, when will it end? Boom or bust? What kind of landing will it be? A hard one or a soft one? And we've also coupled that with some insight on the Boat Business Channel on our website about the Q1 brokerage figures. So I thought it'd be worth just digging into that a little bit, because until April this year, the brokerage market had been tracking pretty closely to 2021 in terms of performance. And as we all know, 2021 was by far and away the most successful year for brokerage sales in history. I mean, not just by a distance, by miles. So Q1 2022 tracked very, very closely to Q1. So we put sales at Q1 2022 at 155 brokerage sales compared to 150 in Q1 2021. So actually 2022 was doing better than 2021. But for the first time this year, the numbers have dropped in April compared to the previous year. So we logged 48 brokerage sales in April 2022. There were 57. In April 2021. So could this be the start of the slowdown that many predict in the feature in the June issue of the magazine? And it's not hard to see why. Interest rates are going up. The Dow has shed a few thousand points since the start of the year. Gold is holding strong. Cryptos are absolutely tanking. The macro situation doesn't look great. Further interest rate rises are expected and the stock of good brokerage boats is being depleted.
I wonder if that's got a large part to play with it, actually. If the boats just aren't available to sell, that's going to have a knock-on effect.
It's certainly, yeah, absolutely. And it's something that the brokers have been talking about for the longest time. If you make a comment, we did a boat business piece analysing Q1 2022 versus Q1 2021, and a lot of the brokers said that. So in this analysis piece we put in the Boat Business Channel, we asked a bunch of brokers about Q1 specifically. So these comments relate to Q1 and don't include, obviously, that slight dip in performance we saw in April. So Camper and Nicholson CEO Paolo Cassani said that demand was still strong as new buyers are attracted to the world of superyachts. The increase in wealth of the world's richest crypto and technology entrepreneurs accounted for a good number of new faces, he said. The current geopolitical situation and volatile stock markets need to be monitored. So far in Q1, however, these issues didn't affect the market overall. Edmiston's Alex Kurzweil said there have been several macro factors that have inevitably affected the yacht business in Q1, including geopolitical tensions and conflicts, rising fuel prices and inflation. He added that more specifically to yachting, 2021 was such a strong sales year that now the supply of great boat yachts is more limited than many of the European shipyards are at capacity for new builds, meaning delivery of today's orders won't be until 2026 and beyond. This is putting pressure on demand and prices for pedigree yachts.
It's really interesting. I mean, the demand is something we've talked about before, but I'm interested to see the comment about rising fuel prices affecting the things, because that's something conversation I keep having with people. And sometimes people say, oh, no, it's not affecting, you know, no, don't worry about that. That's not a thing, you know, that's worrying anyone. But, you know, Alex seems to have quoted it as a potential kind of factor So I'm quite interested in how much that is slash will affect things. I guess also just in terms of the manufacturing and the transport of things, everything has a bit of a domino effect.
Yeah, I think it does. I mean, even the world's richest people feel the pinch from time to time. So it's just, I mean, everyone's asking the same question. When's it going to end? How is it going to end? We try and answer some of those questions in the June issue. And it's interesting that the April performance was a bit down, and it just seems like the headwinds are growing. Some of the pressures on the supply chain are really being felt. Fuel prices, inflation, a slightly less bullish equities market are finally being, you know, all of that is feeding through into a slightly depressed performance in April. But, you know, May might, as the sun comes out and people get on the water, it might go mad again. We'll just have to wait and see. But there's lots of other cool stuff in the June issue besides our asking the question, is it boom or is it bust? Including the winners of our annual Ocean Awards. We also have a look at the new 44.6 meter Baltic Path, special boat that, and the truly classic Grace 3 from SES Yachts in Turkey. We also discover, and Charlotte did this one, how and why people are leaving their super yachts to charity.
Yeah, I mean, we've discussed that before, but it's definitely worth a read. Have a look. And in terms of other features coming up kind of later in the year, we're also now putting together our Adventure Special, which comes out every year in September. Always one of my favourite issues. You know, if you have a super yacht and you're not adventuring on it, then why not? Because it's the coolest thing you can do. But we're going to do a big focus on the South Pacific this time around. Definitely on my bucket list. So I just wanted to mention, you know, if anyone's listening, if you're an owner and you've been somewhere recently that's really cool, or you want to share kind of stories, your adventures, or any top tips of what to do and how and why, then do get in touch. Emails podcast@boatinternationalmedia.com.
Yeah, I love that adventure issue too. We put the little turtle on the spine. I love that issue. It's a good one.
Tiny turtle.
So let's talk some good news ahead of the Med season, and that is that Turkey has liberalized its charter rules. Previously, it was only possible for foreign flag vessels to obtain year-long licenses to charter in Turkish waters, which was quite massively expensive and sometimes time-consuming process. So as an example, a year's charter license in 2022 for a 39 to 59 meter vessel is €146,600. So that's a chunk of change. So if you want to charter your boat, take your boat to the Eastern Med and have it available for charter for a few weeks, you've got to guarantee kind of 3 or 4 weeks or even more to recoup some of that spent on the charter fee. But it was announced at the MIBA charter show in Barcelona that foreign flagged boats can now get monthly licenses in Turkey, which offers a lot more flexibility to people's charter programs. So for the same size boat, 39 to 59 meters, the monthly license is €39,100. Quite the difference. So ultimately, this is all about, you know, pulling more. Well, they will be poor after paying the charter license. Pulling more boats to the Eastern Med and into the stunning cruising waters of Turkey. The Turquoise Coast, Fethiye, Göcek, all those places are just absolutely stunning with loads to see. So. Hopefully, we'll look at the AIS signals, but I expect this will mean a lot more boats go east.
Well, I hope so. It's such an interesting area, Turkey, and that's such a big price drop that I really hope it does have a knock-on effect. But like you say, you know, you hear so much. The Greek islands seem to get all the kind of attention in terms of sort of island hopping in the Med and stuff. But I've been around Turkey on a sailing yacht, and it's some really unspoilt, beautiful places. And, you know, everything that you have in Greece, incredible food, incredible scenery, beautiful water. Obviously, you know, because of factors like this, it's always been that bit harder for owners to kind of make it make sense. So, yeah, I really hope we see an uptick there and it'll be easy for us to track it.
Yeah, I think we will. And I've also heard on the wires, and actually the digital team are looking into this right now, that Greece's rules are changing this year too to make it easier for foreign flag boats to charter in its waters. So keep an eye on the boatinternational.com website. We'll have some really exciting news about Greece. Because, I'm sure they might have seen what Turkey was doing or vice versa, because, you know, it would be hard for Turkey to watch Greece pulling all these charter boats into its waters and not take advantage of the same movement of the fleet from west to east. So between the two of them, they could really, really disrupt the classic kind of Western Med cruising patterns that we expect from a lot of this charter fleet.
Okay, so let's take a look at the news stories for this week. Not a great one to start with, and it concerns the 2004 45-meter Benetti Domani, which had to be aided by the US Coast Guard after its beach club flooded on Monday. Thankfully, all seven people on board were taken off safely unharmed. She was disabled and found to be taking on water 45 miles off Gray's Harbor in Washington. Beach club started flooding, it was reported, after a crew member was unable to close the transom door, which must have been pretty frightening. The Coast Guard towed the boat towards land and handed Domani over to a commercial towing company. So some of the video is pretty dramatic with the boat kind of wallowing in the choppy conditions and everything. Not ideal, but I guess good that everyone got off safely.
Yeah, the boat was saved. People got off safely, which is a great result all round, really. It should never have happened. So we're not quite sure why the transom door couldn't be closed, but we're endeavouring to find out. But you can see the video and the story for yourself on the website. As ever, we'll put a link in the description. Next up, we have the news that a mystery 100 meter plus project has been glimpsed at Lursen, rumored to be named Project Alibaba, and estimated to be between 115 and 130 meters in length. The vessel is now set to be assembled. Images have been released of the bow and stern being moved, ready for the next stage of the build process. Details about the yacht's design team and onboard features remain tightly under wraps, as you'd expect, but the very few and scant details we can tell from the pictures are that she's bloody huge, has a bulbous bow, as you'd expect, and a very generous foredeck.
I love the idea when we're talking about glimpsing something that's that big. Obviously, it's a bit more than a glimpse because it's so massive. I feel like we're permanently talking about glimpsing things coming out of the Lursen sheds. I wonder if we sort of permanently have a spy station there in the bushes just waiting for things to emerge. But that sounds very exciting. Huge.
Yeah, another massive Lursen project. They seem to be dropping them almost weekly at the moment. They're very, very
definitely
busy.
Well, lastly, another exciting new project is that Dutch design studio Vrijpak has unveiled new renderings of a very cool 88-metre concept called Utopia at Sea. The concept boasts an onboard park and four air purifying units that work to reduce CO2 production. We connected our award-winning diesel-electric propulsion system to nature-inspired air-purifying units and visibly attached the entire system to an onboard park, providing it with clean air, said Robin De Vries, the senior designer at Vrijpak. The yacht will be able to accommodate 15 guests in total with a crew of 14, and amenities include a large helideck on the aft with tender storage and a crane amidships that can double as a mini basketball court. That sounds awesome. I love the idea of a park on board a boat.
Yeah, it does look cool. But you'd expect that from Vrijpak, the very, very forward thinking. And it's bang on trend, the design of this boat. It looks great. Righty. So let's talk data, which as ever is brought to you by Boat Pro, the superyacht industry's leading market intelligence service. This week, we're looking at superyacht production in China in light of Sophia's recent presentation at the cluster meeting in Monaco about up and coming superyacht building nations. Last week, we discussed Poland, and now we're in the Middle Kingdom. So to date, China has built 217 superyachts, or just 1.8% of the global fleet. The Chinese superyacht fleet's average size is 30.4 meters in length, and just 8 of that 217 are sailing boats, so massively dominated by motor yachts. Most of their production is between 24 and 30 meters in length, and just 3 are over 70 meters. Interestingly, just a single superyacht was built in China before 1980. As you might expect, the Maoist regime wasn't big on its boats. Production really ramped up in the 2000s. 58 superyachts were built in China between 2000 and 2009. I was actually in China between 2000 and 2009. I don't recall seeing many superyachts, but I was just a poor newspaper reporter. So between 2000 and 2009, 58 superyachts were built, and 96 were built between 2010 and 2019. There are 28 projects in build in the country right now, the largest of which is a 46 meter built by Jinlong. And your favorite martial arts superstar owns a Jinlong, doesn't he, Charlotte?
Jackie Chan, he does. He owns a couple of them, actually, or at least as far as we know, as far as I can work out. He had one previously, and then actually that 46 meter that you mentioned by Jin Long, he's got one of those delivered back in 2019. You can see it on our website now if you go kind of back through the searches. But it's got six cabins and it can sleep 12 guests. And as you might expect from everyone's favorite martial arts expert, has a gym and a beach club. And he also owns a 38.1 meter Ruying yacht too, so another Chinese yard. But all of these yards are very tight-lipped and hard to get anything out of. As any regular listeners know, it's my lifelong ambition to get hold of Jackie Chan, not only Pharrell Williams, but also Jackie Chan. He's also on the hit list. And so far, I'm getting not very far. But yeah, so he owns a couple of Jin Longs and a Ruying as well. So
every 6 months, we have a features meeting. So Jackie, you've got to get Jackie.
Yeah, I think it's a disproportionate amount of time I spend thinking about Jackie Chan, writing to people that might know Jackie Chan. It's a bit like having a sort of pen pal that shows no interest in writing back. But there you go. One day, Jackie will be on the pod and it will all have been worthwhile.
We'll have to stick him on the cover.
Exactly.
So the biggest superyacht shipyard in China is Heisei, which is based in the Pearl River Delta near Hong Kong. They have 10 projects in build. Interestingly, Silver Yachts, originally Australia-based Silver Yachts, well, it's still Australia-based Silver Yachts, have started building super yachts in China after a Chinese aluminium manufacturer bought a stake in the company back in 2017. Silver Yachts is 36-meter Space Cats are in construction there, hull one of which is sold and is expected to hit the water soon. Exciting, more catamarans to come.
Yeah, and you finally got your way with the catamarans after months of a sort of catamaran campaigning. We will be doing a big feature on catamarans coming up probably around the October issue. You know, all the ones we've mentioned over the past few months and some other really cool new ones. There are a lot of amazing ones out there. So we'll look forward to that. So that's probably it for this week. Thank you for tuning in. Thank you for listening again. This episode of Boat Briefing was mixed and produced by Grace Nielsen and is a production of Boat International Media. And don't forget to like and subscribe, and we'll see you next week.
See you next time.